Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
The Score!
For some chin music.
Hey, Al, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
The one thing that I always go back to is, you know, in game planning for, you know, to play against the White Sox, it wasn't so much what can you do to beat them, it's what type of energy and what type of team is coming out there to play against you that particular day.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, David Hall, Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. Love playing chin music because we get opportunities to comment on guys who maybe went a little far. I don't know if he did or not. Pedro Grifol, that was his interview on the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. Courtney Finnecombe of that podcast had a really, I thought, fun interview with Grifol, Bruce, and he was relaxed. The questions were good. And he was, I think, pretty candid in addressing what the White Sox were in 2022. And that was a team, apparently, you just heard, that couldn't be counted on to bring the energy, even though they might have had more talent. That's a very indicting comment of the team you just inherited or the team that you will now manage. What did you think of Grifol being as honest about the players that he will face for the first time in Glendale in a month?
Well, it's very similar to what Tony La Russa said to me on the way out and what he said in his press conference on the way out. He was not able to get the players to play the way they needed to, okay? For whatever reason, whether it was individual accountability or the fact that, they for some reason just weren't responding, this was seen not only across every dugout, and I think Kansas City had a record where they had a better record than the White Sox head-to-head last year. So Grifol got to see this firsthand. It wasn't just every dugout where coaches and managers and players saw this. We saw it all year. We talked about it all year. It was a listless, lifeless effort by the White Sox. The front office was sick to their stomach by this, by the end of the year, and they were way beyond saying this was Tony La Russa's fault at that point. La Russa certainly stepped up and took the blame, as he should, when a manager and coaches can't get the best out of players. But this is not anything we hadn't seen all year. I applaud Pedro Grifol for stepping up and saying, yeah, we saw it. They had a tremendous amount of talent on that team, more than we had, and we beat them in head-to-head competition. So it's pretty obvious, and I think what you're getting around to, David, is the fact that Grifol, maybe looked at as a middleweight manager coming in, might be a heavyweight manager. You know, he might have a big punch.
That right jab might be a little bit more lethal than we thought. I think that. And I do wonder that, Bruce, because it's one thing to have you or I or people that cover the team or talking heads, if you will, comment on what the White Sox were in terms of being lethargic in 2022 and how that contributed to being the most disappointing team in baseball. The person who is charged with making that different, leading them next year, the guy who is now your manager, there's a little risk involved in being that open publicly. I think that's the aspect that privately, you know, he's going to be holding people accountable. The public nature of it, you wonder always, I do at least, about how the perception will affect the reality, how the public perception will affect the private reality, because he has to face these guys. And the first time as a group, when he does, it'll be, oh yeah, that's the guy that was calling us out on the radio and the podcast in the off season.
Look, David, this is about the players, okay? The previous group, they're going to, you know, La Russa steps down for health issues. They clearly, the job wasn't gotten done. That's on the White Sox in the front office and the manager and the coaches, okay? This one, if Grafal is not able to get the best out of him, then it's going to be clear that this was a bad mix of players, okay? And that changes had to be made. They have made some changes. They brought in a new starting pitcher. They brought in a new outfielder that should be a top-of-the-order hitter somewhere along the line. As Rick Hahn said, they're not done yet. This is only January the 7th. We have another few months to go before spring training and the start of the season. So there's things to be done. But clearly, not only the message from the manager and the coaches, but the message from the players has to be a lot different. The one telling thing about the White Sox that really hasn't been underlined enough and talked about enough, I believe, David, is Jose Abreu not only leaving here because there was, quote-unquote, not a big match for him any longer with the White Sox, but that he probably wanted to leave at this point. And I think he was as fed up with what he saw last year as any of the front office fans or people around the game that watch the Chicago White Sox. I didn't hear a lot of pushback from him.
I can't blame him, Bruce.
Hey, I want to play. In the previous contract he signed with the White Sox, a three-year deal for $50 million, he said, I'm a White Sox player. I'm going to stay. One way or another, I'm signing with the White Sox. We heard nothing like that from Jose Abreu this time around.
Well, I think what we're talking about in Grafal's comments and what you're mentioning in Abreu's decision are very related, because Grafal is commenting on a team that was unpredictable in its approach mentally, in its approach in terms of effort, and we're talking about a guy in Jose Abreu that must have driven him crazy. This is a guy that does not want drama. The most predictable professional athlete the Sox have had under contract in many years. The ultimate consummate professional. Why not get out of town the first opportunity you have a chance? His idea of drama, the most difficult dilemma he'll face in Houston is which, you know, how, what size of a ring is he going to order and how many diamonds will be in it. He's thinking championship. This is not a guy who wanted to suffer fools any longer. So I understand why he wanted to get out of town, but I think it's telling, and I think it is related to how bad last year actually was for everybody that endured it.
Right. So, you know, Grafal is the right guy. La Russa said to me, Grafal is the right guy after they picked him. You know, he just sent me a text back when I said, what do you think? He said, talk to the guy. White Sox did a great job of vetting him. He's the right guy. So everybody agrees that this is a very good move. Even though people in Chicago had never heard of Pedro Grafal before, that has very little to do with it. At some point in Tampa, when they hired Joe Maddon, people hadn't really heard of him either. So people get their opportunity. Pedro Grafal is going to have as good a chance as anybody to be successful with the Chicago White Sox. But again, the players are going to have to give a different effort out there. It has to be a different energy level out there for them to play, and for White Sox fans, frankly, to come out, David, you know, they're the show me fans of baseball. They're the Missouri fans of baseball. You got to show me who you are before we come out, okay? Because we think we saw a championship team developing here for 2 years, and last year you were a 500 team. Show me you're different.
Well, maybe, but Rick Hahn, show me a second baseman, because I don't know if the internal options that he referenced earlier this week. I'm all for Romy Gonzalez. I think he's a really fine young player. I am the guy who was pounding the desk, because you reminded me last week, I think, Bruce, Lenin Sosa was the guy that could give them a spark. But show me a second baseman. And Rick Hahn, this week, he spoke the day before we heard from Pedro Grafal, and this is what he had to say about what the White Sox still have left to do.
We're going to continue to look, you know, what happens over the course of the next 6 weeks leading into camp, and then the 6-7 weeks that we're in camp is impossible to predict. But certainly the way we perceive ourselves is not as a finished product at this time.
So what do you think, Bruce? Do you think that says trade for a second baseman? Do you think that says internal options for second base? Because I think when you look at what's left to do, the one major hole in terms of expectations and what you should feel good about, I still have questions about the second base plan.
I agree with you. I mean, you know, is Garcia still in the mix? We haven't heard his name at all. You named
Thankfully.
The two young guys. Garcia coming off of a bad year, not a good year after signing a longer contract after having a great season. So I think that room for improvement is that Han is showing you he's open-minded about deals that can be made and that they will continue to look at players there. Again, is there a Robbie Alomar out there in his prime that's going to be available? No. I don't think you're going to be able to get a player like that. Are you going to settle for the type of second baseman they've had the last couple of years, journeyman guys that just were okay but didn't really get the job done the way they want for the future? No. I mean, they might stick with Gonzalez. They might stick with Sosa. Garcia might be a part of it. You might not have a perfect situation there. But again, inventory-wise, where do you think the White Sox have multiple players at positions to trade? Where do you think in their system they have players to trade where it doesn't hurt the major league product right now?
Bruce, the only position I would think there, it's not even a surplus, but if you're dealing from a position of relative strength, it would have to be the outfield prospects. A guy like Yoki Cespedes might be able to bring somebody back in return or be part of a package. I would not trade Colson Montgomery. I would not touch any of the young pitchers that you have invested any kind of hope or high draft picks in right now. So I think it's a very delicate balance you have to strike, but you do have a need that exists for a team that should feel like when they report to Glendale, they can win the division. And you're not there yet. If you're the White Sox in the AL Central, given where your talent is, you have to feel like you can win that division. And that, I think that's the expectation. That is what we heard from Pedro Grifol. I wonder, though, Bruce, is that the realistic plan for this year? Anything else would be unacceptable for White Sox fans, I would think.
I would say as big a concern for me for the White Sox, and I think they're going to have bounce back years from a lot of guys. I think they're going to be a contender this year. But the biggest concern continues to be not second base, but catcher. Okay. If Grandal's knee goes out again.
Good point.
What yep. is your plan? What, I mean, Zavala, okay, maybe okay backup, you know, maybe okay. But again, what is your plan if Grandal, you know, 2 years in a row with knee injuries? I'm not saying, I think he gives you all the effort he has. He just had zero last year. His year was a complete waste of time for him and the team because of injury and because of the fact he never got his bat going. What is your backup plan to that? I know they have a final year invested in him, and he's been working out with a trainer, and he's working hard. I never question his desire or his work efforts. I just wonder what he's got left with all the knee issues that he's had at his age right now.
That's a great point and a question the Sox have to address before reporting to spring training next month. Bruce, there are two little things I want to get your opinion on. Number one, I got in an interesting debate with Dan Bernstein during transition this past week over Oscar Colas. He does not have a lot of confidence in him. He looked at some projections that came out this week, and I am the other way, on the other side of it. I'm looking forward to seeing Oscar Colas develop and blossom. I think he can be the answer. I'm not going to say that he's going to be the Cuban Ohtani the way that he came into the States when he signed that contract, but I do like the idea of letting a rookie play right field who has shown some progress at the minor league level. Wonder what you think about that. And second to that, Lucas Giolito. There's a really good story, Darryl Von Scowen, in today's Sun-Times. I encourage everybody to get a copy and read it, but he's slimming down this offseason, and his approach has been opposite of what last year's offseason was because it didn't work, and it was a failed experiment. So as for Colas, as for Giolito, what are your thoughts on those two things?
Well, Giolito did get bulky, okay? He got big, all right? And I think they felt and he felt that there'd be just a little bit of more power and a little bit more durability for the season. It didn't work out that way. So slimming down is probably a good idea. I think command of his pitches and predictability is big a part of his problem, not his weight. You know, I just think the changeup in the fastball really didn't have the same type of separation of numbers and impact that they had in the past. So if the weight loss is going to contribute to him having a better selection and a less predictable pitching, I'm all for that. As far as Colas goes, what was Dan's contention about what he saw from the development of Colas and why he didn't think he was going to be ready?
Not good enough power numbers, I believe. A little bit more inconsistency than he would want. And I just think overall the unpredictability or the uncertainty of having a rookie out there whose projections aren't what maybe you would want from your everyday right fielder.
Yeah, I'm all good with it. And I think because of the fact that they keep talking about Jimenez being an outfielder, you know, even though he's going to be DH most of the time, and Grafal and Hahn have talked about the fact that he's going to continue to take balls out there. Two things. One, you know, if Colas isn't that good, Benintendi can play all three positions very well. Number two is you are going to have injury. Okay, there will be injuries. It always occurs. You don't know where they're going to be at, so you have to be depth. And I think the one thing the White Sox have to work on is again getting enough depth to be that World Championship team if a player or two goes down. Last year, they had three players that only played half a season. You know, and that's not going to get it done with Jimenez, Anderson, and Robert. All playing 80 games. I don't care who's managing or who's coaching. You're not going to win when you have that type of production player-wise that's injured. So the depth on the team is, I think, the major issue for Rick Hahn and the White Sox going to spring training, adding more depth to that team. And as he said, you know, there's plenty of time to do it. Let's see how they go about it, whether it's free agency or trade. But there's no question, you know, there are a few holes, but I still think people having their normal years and playing the normal amount of games, it's a championship caliber team, not
Bruce,
a world.
Before
championship.
We break, I think division championship team. I think that right now is where they are.
Get in. You're the Phillies. Get in.
Get in. Just get in. Last thing, Bruce. We heard from Grafal during the Benintendi press conference, and one thing that stood out. It wasn't necessarily what we came into the segment talking about, but he left open the possibility that Eloy Jimenez could still play the outfield, that he could still possibly play right field. And if I were Pedro Grafal, one of the first things I would do when I got to Glendale, Arizona, I would hide Eloy Jimenez's glove. And I would say, here's an extra bat. Give me your glove. You're a designated hitter. Get used to it. I wouldn't leave the door open even a crack. And yet I think that he did that. What did you think of those comments?
Well, I think it goes back to the depth issue. You know, if one of your main outfielders gets hurt, you have the fire drill about who moves where, right? So if it's Robert that gets hurt again, is Benintendi your center fielder? Who's your left fielder? Is Sheets good enough to go in and step in again, or do you start running into the same defensive metric issues that you had in the past, and your team is back to where they were in 2021. Again, back end depth. Moving it forward from the back end. Championship teams build the bullpens up from the back end. They build their benches up from the back end. They build up their catching from the back end. These are things that the White Sox need to address. It's not always easy to do economically. It's not always easy to do as far as acquiring those type of players, but they have time to do it.
Bruce, when we come back, it's time to play another one of our favorite games, Chicago Bound. We just love the music, but we also like the possibility. There are some players we want to ask, could they be Chicago Bound in the offseason that remains? It's Inside the Clubhouse. David Hall, Bruce Levine, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
That you all should know, Chicago is the greatest place I ever know. I'm gonna stay in this town. I'm gonna live in this town. I'm gonna live in Chicago, the greatest place around.
The Cubs and Sox are off for the winter, but inside the clubhouse starts the hot stove discussion now. David and Bruce take a look at which free agents and trades the Cubs and Sox should explore. Will they trade for a top pitcher or player? Is free agency the way the North and South Siders go? Who's on David Ross or Pedro Grifol's wish list? You help them make the call. 312-644-6767.
On the other side of 161st and River, that one's driven out to right field and deep. Gamble turns, looks, see ya! A home run for Torres. It's 7-2 Yanks.
Well, it's always a good thing when you see Gleyber Torres going the other way. His 22nd of the year.
High fly ball, deep left. Sawinski back, turning, looking, see ya! A two home run inning for Gleyber Torres, a three-run shot, and it's 14-2.
David Haw, Bruce Levine, inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Thank you, Yes Network, for those highlights from last season. Gleyber Torres, Yankee second baseman, infielder, hitting two of those. Bruce, I love that music. We like this segment. It is talking about players possibly coming to Chicago via trade or free agency. Chicago bound, if you will. That's the name of the segment. How about Gleyber Torres? Is he available via trade? And if he is, do you think Rick should pick up the phone?
So the New York Yankees have two outstanding young players that they want to implement at short and second base. That makes one of their second basemen, either LeMahieu or Torres, available. LeMahieu's injury history the last 2 years makes him pretty much untradeable at this time. Therefore, Torres, who had a comeback year last year, hitting 24 home runs after having a miserable 2021, marginal short season 2020, after hitting 38 home runs the year before, is a very real possibility to get traded. And the reason for that is they want to open up that area to their young guys, the Yankees do. They also have the backup of Falafa, who was their shortstop last year, and LeMahieu. So they feel fortified there. Torres can bring back a left-handed pitcher that the New York Yankees want in their bullpen. They need left-handed pitching in their bullpen. The White Sox have left-handed pitching in their bullpen. So my question to you, David, is would you put in a deal Aaron Bummer or Crochet for Torres? Okay,
yes.
That is the question to you. Okay.
Yes, so, I would.
So the person that I talked to with the Yankees, and they would probably have more interest in Crochet than they would have in Bummer at this point. Again, Crochet's upside is huge. His injuries are concerning. Whether he's a starter or a reliever is unknown, but we do know he has that power arm.
I don't like giving up on first-round draft picks with the kind of potential Garrett Crochet has shown. And my reaction was more instinctive and immediate than maybe giving it some thought. It is a difficult dilemma if you're Rick Hahn. Garrett Crochet, coming off the surgery, could still be as powerful and lethal as he looked like he was capable of being before it. So that would be a very difficult trade to make. That said, Bruce, Gleyber Torres is no slouch. As you point out, the Yankees are moving him because he is stalling the progress of some prospects, but it's not as if Gleyber Torres is somebody on the wrong side of 30 whose best days are behind him. They could trade for Gleyber Torres at 26 years old. He was his WAR in 2022 was 4.1. This is somebody who, as you point out, had a very resurgent year. I think if you're the White Sox and you play your cards right, if you make that trade, why couldn't he be part of your future and your present? Because he's going to help you win now, and he's going to be part of the reason you believe you can win later. So that's why I would be more willing to give up a lefty in a bullpen that needs them, but you got to give up something to get something.
Here's my concern with Crochet. love his arm, love that they brought him up early, put him in the bullpen. But how do you stretch him out after an injury? Is he a continued bullpen guy? Is he your closer of the future, David? The plan was to be similar to Michael Kopech's, and that is bring him along in the bullpen, then bring him along in innings, and slowly spot start him. That was the plan for last year, and it imploded because he got injured. And then move him up to the level where he can come back and throw 120 innings the next year and be a part of your very young power arm-related rotation. Right now, after coming back from the injury, maybe he's a bullpen guy forever. Maybe Kopech coming back after injury is a bullpen guy in the future. We don't know these things right now for the White Sox. Again, I always thought Kopech was going to be a dominant back-end closer. Rick Hahn and I have had these discussions for 4 or 5 years now about Kopech. You know, I always thought he's going to be a bullpen guy. He said he's got the stuff to be a rotation pitcher. Rick was right. He does have the stuff. Does he have the durability in the ability to throw 6-7 innings 30 times a year as opposed to coming out of the bullpen 2 or 3 times a week and closing games out for one inning?
I tend to be in agreement with you on this, Bruce. I think, and I have gone back and forth with Michael Kopech, but what we have seen from him as a starter are a lot of issues with durability and dependability. Maybe that wouldn't be as big of an issue in the bullpen, and that would affect your thinking on Crochet and maybe certainly Bummer. A question before we move on to the other name. If you got Gleyber Torres in a White Sox uniform somehow, what does that do to them in terms of solidifying that infield and making them into a more legitimate contender?
What it does to them is you will see the next highest paid free highest paid contract in White Sox history, because Torres would be getting that at the next level. But what it does is it makes them. I mean, Torres is a very good second baseman. I don't know if he's a Gold Glover yet. He certainly was not a Gold Glover at shortstop when they played him out of position 2 years ago. So he's a very good player with good defensive skills. And doing my homework on him, an outstanding team guy, outstanding family guy, guy that would fit in, just comes to work every day, works hard, and wants to play. So to be able to get Gleyber Torres from the Yankees, I think would be a coup for them. Left-handed, right-handed, forget about it. You know, the guy is a good ball player, and he would fit in greatly with this team, I think.
Did he have any overlap with Eloy Jimenez in the Cubs organization? I think they had to have at some point, correct?
Oh yeah, they had a relationship. They had a good relationship, and
that would be a nice little bonus if you get him. But there'd be a lot to like about that deal if it's attainable. Jason, I don't know how realistic it is, Bruce.
Jason McLeod told me after he left the Cubs, he said, the one trade that was the hardest one for him to make was to leave Torres. He said he hated losing Jimenez, but he felt Torres was the creme de la creme, as our good friend Chet Kopech used to say, and the fact that he was going to be the best player out of the organization. He sure looked like it the first 2 years he played for the Yankees, you know, hitting 62 home runs. But coming back last year was a resurgence. I just think that there's a deal to be made out there, and the White Sox and Yankees have a great relationship. Rick Hahn, Ken Williams have great relationship with Brian Cashman. If there's a match there, I think they can get something done.
And our producer, Sean Sears, even remembers Gleyber Torres from a prospect day, I believe, when he showed what he was capable of accomplishing and getting into the and developing into the kind of player that that he has become. Right, Sean?
Yeah, that's right. I remember there being some like real consensus that the Cubs like at some point might trade a Javier Baez to open up a spot for Gleyber Torres. They thought his glove might even be better than Javier Baez, which sounds silly now that we know who Torres and Baez are now. But that was the thought behind there, that people thought this guy was just kind of, Baez was the placeholder for this Torres who was coming up here and tearing up, you know, the Mid-Atlantic Conference and whatnot. So fun guy to watch too.
Bruce, the next tier of possibilities for somebody Chicago bound obviously would include the discarded free agent pile. And on that pile is Mike Moustakas, a guy that a lot of both teams in town know well. He's still on the open market. I suppose from the Sox perspective, he would address the need. I don't think defensively they would be getting somebody they would trust or feel good about. But where do you think the market will shift for a Mike Moustakas, and what's your interest level if you're Rick Hahn?
Well, Moustakas is coming off of three bad years, so it might be a minor league deal, you know, for Moustakas to come to spring training and make a team at this point. You know, injuries have had taken away a guy who was an outstanding player and a championship player with Kansas City, and had a year or two that was decent with Cincinnati, but the last three have been poor years and injury-plagued years. I think it's a minor league contract. I would love to see the White Sox bring him in as a minor league contract and as spring training invitee, because, again, it gives you some real strong backup at third base. It gives him strong backup at first base. It gives you strong backup at DH. Another, you know, he has power from the left side. So with all of that in mind, I think it's a no-lose situation. Why not bring in a guy like that who has had experience being playing for a world champion, who was a leader on his teams when he was playing well? I think it's a no-brainer to give him a minor league contract and bring him in.
Last name on this list, Bruce, is not related to Moustakas, is not related to Torres or any infield positions. This is a guy who White Sox fans are very familiar with, and everyone in baseball is too. Our guy John Heyman reported that the Boston Red Sox are willing to listen and could be potentially open to trading Chris Sale. How realistic do you think that is? If Chris Sale is indeed available, what would those conversations be like for either the Cubs or the White Sox?
Well, I think, you know, again, what Sale's been able to do is negligible over the past 3 years. You know, since being on the mound as a closer in the World Championship game for the Red Sox in 2018, it's been all downhill for Chris Sale. And the idea that he could help somebody, I think, is intriguing. You know, is Boston going to eat most of the rest of that contract? Probably. But coming back to Chicago would be intriguing, and he could be a part of the public relations department and the marketing to develop some new uniforms for the Chicago White Sox as well.
He's never going to live that down.
I mean, David, you covered him like I did. He was always an intriguing guy, interesting guy. Yeah, he was out there a lot. You know, cutting up the uniforms was strange and weird. But you loved his passion. The fact that he went to the Detroit clubhouse back in 2017 and got thrown out of a game and then went to the Detroit clubhouse and wanted to go in and fight those guys, that's just unbelievable stuff. The passion that the guy had was unbelievable. His post-game interviews going up and back with him were a lot of fun. Him and I had a great time with that. He's a different dude, but if he's got anything left in the tank, you know, and it doesn't cost you a lot, again, why not?
I enjoyed covering Chris Sale. I really did admire and respect his competitiveness. I also, Bruce, at different times had conversations with him in the clubhouse and on the air or whatever the case may be. You remember, he took a very team-friendly deal, and he sacrificed a lot of money and left a lot of it on the table for the security that the contract he signed with the White Sox brought him. He ended up getting paid anyway. He's never going to worry about his mortgage payment. Chris Sale is a rich man, and the wealth came later. But I remember having some very interesting conversations with Chris Sale about his decision to go for the security earlier in his career, before he had maybe arrived as the pitcher he is today. And I just found him to be one of the more fascinating guys in that clubhouse. Very unpredictable, very temperamental, and extremely competitive. But a guy who I do have fond memories of. He also, you can't ignore, as you point out, Bruce, he's pitched 11 games, I think, in the last three seasons. Injuries have gotten in the way of wherever he was headed in terms of a legacy and a career. But if his last act and his final act involves a detour through Chicago, I'd love it. I think it would be fascinating theater, and who knows what he has left. A big risk, look, yes. You need them to pay the money, yes, but who knows?
Desire to win is unquestioned when it comes to Chris Sale, even off the chart as far as what level he'll go to. So bringing back a passionate player, if he's got anything left, I think it's a no-brainer. And again, Rick Hahn, throughout his career, before he became the general manager, made his bones by making getting players to sign these wonderfully team-friendly long-term contracts that enabled them not only to get the best out of the player at a reasonable rate, but to also acquire players coming back, like he was able to do in the Sale trade for Moncada and Michael Kopech. That was a deal that was made, that benefited both teams greatly. It shouldn't be forgotten that Moncada was close to an MVP player in 2019, having a terrific year, and they're still waiting for that ability to come back and be shown in 2023.
All right, Bruce, when we come back, let's set the stage for the Cubs convention, which begins next Friday downtown, and it will include this year the return of the Ricketts Family Forum, or whatever they are calling it. The Ricketts family will be available and address the Cubs fans at the convention. We'll talk about that next. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
We continue to have the best relationship with our fans of any sport in the world, any professional sports team in the world. And that starts with the Marquee Network. The Marquee Network. What do you have against the Marquee Network? Believe me, you won't be booing about that in a year. You guys won't, you won't be booing about the Marquee Network in 1 year.
Welcome back. David Haw, Bruce Levine, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was 3 years ago, Bruce. 3 years ago at the Cubs convention, January 2020, Tom Ricketts booed, talking about the Marquee Sports Network, which I know you are a part of. I have been on as recently as last Wednesday, the reporters show. They've done a fine job. And I just wonder, that was the last time that Tom Ricketts addressed the Cubs convention. The next time will be next Saturday morning. The convention begins Friday with the red carpet introductions and a reconvening. And I think it'll be an exciting event because it's the first time in 3 years since they've been able to do this. What do you think the reaction will be this year to Tom Ricketts and the family when they have that opportunity to talk to fans on the stage in that open forum?
You know, I'm not sure, David. I really don't, because I don't know after them ending up the season winning 39 out of their last 70, you know, going 39 and 31. You know, it seems there's a lot of optimism going forward for the Cubs, stepping up, signing a couple really important players, a couple of guys that are two or three guys that are maybes that need resurgent years to reestablish their careers, and guys like Bellinger and a guy like Hosmer, bringing him in. Same thing with Barnhart. You know, guys coming off of bad years, but that have had great careers and are true professionals. But I don't know what the flavor is going to be like after not having a Cub convention for since 2020. I don't know what the fans are going to be looking at as far as Tom or the reception for the Marquee Network. Remember, in January of 2020, the Marquee Network still was not in existence. It was
right.
It didn't start till a month later. So
they got off to a very
a
difficult start with the pandemic and everything that came after, Bruce. But it's a "what have you done for me lately" mentality with sports fans. And frankly, going into this Cub convention, I think it's well timed for the Cubs. They just signed a free agent shortstop who was straight out of Central Casting. Could not be any better for this team at this time than Dansby Swanson. And Tom Ricketts, he rubber-stamped a $177 million investment into that shortstop. They signed Jameson Taillon. That's a smart signing, intelligent spending, if you will. I would be surprised if there's anything but real strong level of enthusiasm at this Cubs convention, because I feel like they're going into spring training with a real legitimate sense of optimism that things are, after two very long years that finished last year on the right note, as you point out, but two very long years that should never happen in Chicago, there's reason for hope.
I think you're also going to see a group of people that are excited to be back together in Cub Nation, okay? Just because there hadn't been a Cub convention for the last few years. And yep, the fact that even with the COVID flaring right now, hopefully people are cautious and go there and enjoy it in a responsible way and have the fun that they haven't had in a number of years and get to see their players up close and personal in the wintertime and get to see the broadcasters and see Pat Hughes for the first time as a Hall of Famer there signing both days, 3 days in a row, in the in the autograph areas. Those are going to be fun and exciting times for Cub fans. Just to be back, being able to talk baseball in January, up close and personal with the people who are responsible for Cub baseball.
And I know a lot of people will show up wanting to see Pete Crow Armstrong, the number one prospect. Absolutely. Probably to have, I think Sean Sears is wearing a sweatshirt today, but I think he actually has PCA tattooed on his shoulder. I'm not sure yet, but he might.
Just don't tell my mom, okay?
We want to thank Sean Sears for a job well done every week producing this show. Jared Banner, the vice president of minor leagues for the Cubs, joined us. Thank you to him. Thank you to you, David, for the great job you're leading the show every week. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website at 670thescore.com. And don't forget to join Mr. Steve Rosenblum for the artistic radio show that he presents every Saturday from 11 to 2.
Thanks so much, Bruce. Thank you, Sean. Yeah, Steve Rosenblum is next until 2. And then we have Chiefs and Raiders here this afternoon leading up to Bulls at 6:45 right here on The Score. Thank you for listening on this Saturday morning. It's been Inside the Clubhouse and a pleasure. Talk to you Monday morning on Mullion Haw. It's David Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
Continue to have the best relationship with our fans of any sport in the world, any professional sports team in the world. And that starts with the Marquee Network. The Marquee Network. What do you have against the Marquee Network? Believe me, you won't be booing about that in a year. You guys won't be booing about the Marquee Network in 1 year.
Welcome back. David Haw, Bruce Levine, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That was 3 years ago, Bruce. 3 years ago at the Cubs convention, January of 2020, Tom Ricketts booed talking about the Marquee Sports Network, which I know you are a part of. I have been on as recently as last Wednesday, the reporters' show. They've done a fine job. And I just wonder, that was the last time that Tom Ricketts addressed the Cubs convention. The next time will be next Saturday morning. The convention begins Friday with the red carpet introductions and a reconvening. And I think it'll be an exciting event because it's the first time in 3 years since they've been able to do this. What do you think the reaction will be this year to Tom Ricketts and the family when they have that opportunity to talk to fans on the stage in that open forum?
You know, I'm not sure, David. I really don't, because I don't know after them ending up the season winning 39 out of their last 70, you know, going 39 and 31. You know, it seems there's a lot of optimism going forward for the Cubs, stepping up, signing a couple really important players, a couple of guys that are two or three guys that are maybes that need resurgent years to reestablish their careers, and guys like Bellinger and a guy like Hosmer, bringing him in. Same thing with Barnhart. You know, guys coming off of bad years, but that have had great careers and are true professionals. But I don't know what the the flavor is going to be like after not having a Cub convention for since 2020. I don't know what the fans are going to be looking at as far as Tom or the reception for the Marquee Network. Remember, in January of 2020, the Marquee Network still was not in existence. It was
right.
It didn't start till a month later. So
they got off to a very a difficult start with the pandemic and everything that came after. Bruce, but it's a what have you done for me lately mentality with sports fans. And frankly, going into this Cub convention, I think it's well timed for the Cubs. They just signed a free agent shortstop who was straight out of Central Casting. Could not be any better for this team at this time than Dansby Swanson. And Tom Ricketts, he rubber stamped a $177 million investment into that shortstop. They signed Jameson Taillon. That's a smart signing, intelligent spending, if you will. I would be surprised if there's anything but real strong level of enthusiasm at this Cubs convention, because I feel like they're going into spring training with a real legitimate sense of optimism that things are, after two very long years that finished last year on the right note, as you point out, but two very long years that should never happen in Chicago, there's reason for hope.
I think you're also going to see a group of people that are excited to be back together in Cub Nation, okay, just because there hadn't been a Cub convention for the last few years. And yep. The fact that even with the COVID flaring right now, hopefully people are cautious and go there and enjoy it in a responsible way and have the fun that they haven't had in a number of years and get to see their players up close and personal in the wintertime and get to see the broadcasters and see Pat Hughes for the first time as a Hall of Famer there signing both days, 3 days in a row in the autograph areas. Those are going to be fun and exciting times for Cub fans just to be back being able to talk baseball in January up close and personal with the people who are responsible for Cub baseball.
And I know a lot of people will show up wanting to see Pete Crow Armstrong, the number one prospect. Absolutely. Probably to have, I think Sean Sears is wearing a sweatshirt today, but I think he actually has PCA tattooed on his shoulder. I'm not sure yet, but he might.
Just don't tell my mom, okay?
We want to thank Sean Sears for a job well done every week producing this show. Jared Banner, the vice president of minor leagues for the Cubs, joined us. Thank you to him. Thank you to you, David, for the great job you're leading the show every week. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine on our website at 670thescore.com. And don't forget to join Mr. Steve Rosenblum for the artistic radio show that he presents every Saturday from 11 to 2.
Thanks so much, Bruce. Thank you, Sean. Yeah, Steve Rosenblum is next until 2. And then we have Chiefs and Raiders here this afternoon leading up to Bulls at 6:45 right here on The Score. Thank you for listening on this Saturday morning. It's been Inside the Clubhouse and a pleasure. Talk to you Monday morning on Mullion Haw. It's David Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.